You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. In the fallout of the elections, the state's Senate Democrats decided a change in leadership was needed. The lawmaker chosen for the job was Senator Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse. The new Senate minority leader joins us today to talk about what the new position entails and what some of her priorities will be for the upcoming session. Senator Schilling, or Minority Leader Schilling, I'm wondering, before we talk about your new role within the state Senate, let's talk a bit about this transportation project that may be coming through La Crosse that we were talking about before the break. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this project, and should the DOT keep money aside to fund a possible expansion within La Crosse?
Yes, and right now all eyes are on the TPC meeting of December 1st of kind of stakeholders in this in Wisconsin, and it's made up of, I think, elected officials and others from kind of around the state. But to see if the transportation secretary had indicated he would like to remove the enumerated funding for this project rather than kind of continuing to kick the can down the road, as he put it kind of in his letter. So we'll have to see if through the Secretary of Transportation, if he feels that we have a conversation going in La Crosse here, that we are engaging in some thoughtful dialogue, so that we need to buy time. It's what we need to buy as a region to find out what are our values, what are the possibilities of, and our vision for transportation in the region. And I know locally we have groups that are sitting down and talking, and I think that that's valuable, that this has kind of been on the back burner for many years, and now it's kind of caught fire after the September 15th letter from Secretary Gottlieb. So I don't have all the answers. I don't know if people around the table have the answers. I think it will be a very different sort of exercise going forward for some of the community involvement. And we just need to be, I think, have some thoughtful discussion about transportation needs in our region, about capacity, about safety, and really work together and recognize that we all want what is best for a thriving community and thriving region. And we will sit down and have those thoughtful conversations. But people certainly are now around the table and getting engaged and really trying to sharpen their pencils about what is realistic and what are some opportunities out there. And I think maybe some new creativity as well as far as how some of these outreaches will be done.
Representative Steve Doyle had mentioned that, you know, there's even a possibility that that funding could go towards public transportation or some other options. Have you taken any sort of stand as to whether or not, you know, maybe we can shift funding around, or maybe we should build some sort of road? Or, as you said, are you kind of waiting to hear what is thrown out there?
Well, I mean, there are kind of two lines of thought in that. If yes, the secretary says yes, that your community can buy a time of a year, and we kind of go down a path of doing some studies and being creative there through the DOT, and I don't know if it'll probably be a DOT-led kind of exercise. The second path is if the secretary says no, you're out of time, this project is coming off of the books, then the problem's not going away. We still need to talk about transportation in our community and what it's going to look like 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years down the road. So we still need to have this conversation regardless of what the Department of Transportation and the secretary offers.
Is the new minority leader, does your role in this whole issue change at all?
I will, as far as the minority leader, I will continue to be that voice of the 32nd. And that is, I mean, this is an issue that is of concern to the 32nd, and talk about commerce, talk about healthy neighborhoods, talk about environmental impacts. And so certainly, I mean, I will have a couple hats that I will wear in this process, but we need to revisit this. And I think that we are getting the right people around the table to be part of those discussions.
So now that you are the minority leader, I'm wondering if you can tell people what exactly that job entails.
Well, as I explained to my kindergarten and fourth grader, I said, I'm thinking about running for class president. What do you think about that? And so certainly on Wednesday, as I was, a unanimous ballot was cast by my colleagues in the Democratic caucus, I am honored for the privilege to be their voice, to be their leader. So on the floor, as far as sort of leading Democratic strategy on the floor, but it's also kind of administrative, where you are overseeing kind of those 14 vaccine offices and some of the paperwork that goes with that. But also it's the strategy inside the building, but also strategy outside of the building. And I'm looking forward to that aspect of it, because we clearly are at a legislative disadvantage that the Republicans control the Senate and the Assembly and, of course, the governor's office. But I'm about relationships, and I've been about building relationships. And I think I go into this new role and responsibility that many of my colleagues know my style. They've worked with me before. I'm not one of those screamers and bombastic leaders on the floor that throw a grenade into the room and walk out. That I don't want to point fingers and say, what are you going to do to fix it? I'm going to say, what are we going to do to fix it? So I'm excited about that opportunity, and really excited about the caucus as a whole, that the 14 of us, we know that we have a right to be heard. We have a right to present alternative ideas to the majority party, but I understand that the majority party will prevail. But I will be respectful of the institution and of the body of the state Senate.
How does your day-to-day job change now with this position? And, also, how does it affect any of your long-term planning?
Well, I can tell you my phone has not stopped ringing since Wednesday. I'm a lot busier as far as people kind of stopping in the office to talk about some things, kind of forecasting the state budget as we look ahead to 2015 when we come back in January. So it is a greater role, certainly, in the caucus, and I'm excited about that. And I don't worry about filling, someone else's shoes, that I bring my own pair. So I have my own style and my own kind of leadership ways and the way that I will conduct myself and work with our caucus and really try to work with the majority party as much as I can. And I look forward to sitting down with Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and talking about some things, just kind of some housekeeping items that we have to deal with in the Senate that's behind the scenes that nobody really kind of follows or knows about, but it's just the day-to-day operation of the state Senate.
So you said you're bringing your own pair of shoes, and some are saying that the former Senate Minority Leader Chris Larson stepped down partially because of the outcome of the election. Democrats failed to pick up 3 open seats within the Senate. Do you have any sense as to that's why he stepped down? And, if leadership were different, could the outcome of the election have been different?
Well, any election, I'm always sort of prepared on election night to feel that I could, either be victorious or being less than victorious, prepare yourself to being run over by a Chevy Silverado truck. And after the election, I woke up the next day and felt like we'd been run over by a tank. We look at certainly the changing landscape really after Act 10 and what has happened to friends and allies around the state, the influence of money both on the Democratic and the Republican side, but really that money that comes in, that third-party special interest independent money that comes in. As a candidate, you feel like you know who your opponent is on the ballot. You don't know who your opponent is out there on the airwaves and in the mailbox because that independent money comes in. And of course, I mean, we're going to have to live with the boundaries of the districts right now. That's the reality that we are in. But there are many areas that we are at that legislative disadvantage if it comes to kind of the makeup of the districts. If it comes to money, we need to make sure that we are recruiting candidates that are reflective of their districts. And basically the message and what the issues that we talk about, that there clearly is a disconnect in rural Wisconsin about many of the issues that we as Democrats talk about, that we care about, that we are selling a bar of soap that nobody seems to be interested in buying. So, but I know that there are issues that we have talked about. And as you look at the referendums across the state and those counties, if it was minimum wage or the expansion, the acceptance of federal money to expand Badger Care and strengthen that overwhelmingly the voters said, yes, those are good ideas, that we value that that's important. So we need to make sure that we make that argument, but we also need to make sure that we are finding ways to promote job growth in the state, economic growth, that we can look at infrastructure, investing in our roads and our bridges and in broadband. That there are areas that we can promote pro-growth initiatives for business if it's small business and entrepreneurs. And that's where I hope that our party can be relevant and working with the majority.
It sounds like you're already thinking ahead to how the Democrats can strategize, not only through the legislative session, but potentially into the next election season. Is there any takeaway from the Republicans? Do you know why the Republicans were so successful in this last election?
They are incredibly disciplined. And I compliment the leaders on that, that they are incredibly disciplined. But we also have to know we used to have a very strong ground game, and we were ahead of the Republicans when it came out to our get out the vote efforts on those last days of identifying our supporters and getting them to the polls. So they have invested a tremendous amount of resources into that. I think they have now, you know, caught up to us, maybe surpassed us in some areas. And so we need to do as a party, you know, I don't want to do navel gazing for the next 18 months and looking down and having a long face and thinking, what did we do wrong? We need to, when I win, I like to study where I did well. And when we are not successful, I like to study extra hard about what went wrong. And so in the next couple of weeks, we will be meeting with folks to kind of determine that and kind of have exit interviews about the candidates and campaigns and our field work and what we can do better. And really, the political landscape has changed, and campaign finance reforms are changing. Finance laws are changing with judges, you know, kind of changing limits and things like that. But what I find disturbing is we go into the next legislative session, I'm already hearing that some of my colleagues want to lift the limits that you can contribute to candidates. And in the assembly, it's a $500 maximum contribution. In the Senate, it's $1,000 per person. And they want to increase those. And I think the voters don't feel that there's not enough money already in politics and in campaigns. There's too much. So we need to make sure we have transparency in those areas of the election. But it is kind of the reality of today, and the campaigns have become much more expensive and nastier in tone. And it's tougher to shake hands at the end of the battle and go into the legislative session and sing kumbaya and try to work together when there are some really negative, hard-hitting, vitriolic words that are out there against colleagues.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Senator Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse, who was just elected by fellow Democrats to become the new Senate Minority Leader. So let's talk about bipartisanship. We hear all about it during the campaign season. And now that you do have this leadership role among the Democrats, how is it that you will really try to get Republicans and Democrats to work together? Obviously, you all are in the minority, but how do you strategize that issue?
Well, I know that in the assembly, the majority parties come out with kind of their agenda, several issues that they have identified. And in the Senate, I look forward to sitting down with Senator Fitzgerald to talk about some of these things. And some of the issues that they're going to put forward and act very quickly and decisively on, I know I cannot bring along the Democratic caucus that they're issuing.
For example?
Vouchers is an example, that voucher expansion. And we need to have accountability legislation on those schools. And the idea of drug testing public aid recipients, that for several reasons, I don't think that in the states that have done it have proven to be cost effective, or some states that have ruled it unconstitutional. But as we go down the laundry list of their issues of priorities, the transportation financing in this state, that is something that I am interested to see where our caucus, where we can be relevant and where we can be helpful. Because this summer I've met with coalitions that are coming together to talk about transportation in our state and how we fund our roads and our bridges and what that means to the economy. And we don't have Democratic and Republican roads. We don't have Democratic and Republican, town roads and county roads and the area. So I hope that's an area that we can maybe find, do the heavy lifting. And there might be, I don't know what the answer is yet. We don't know, have something proposed on the table yet. But there might be Democrats and Republicans that vote for something. There might be Democrats and Republicans that vote against it. But we need to push and pull together, because that is something that we really have not, we have underinvested as we look at some of these projects that are coming down the pike, and just the maintenance of the roads that we currently have. And as I travel many of the town roads and other areas of the state, that they're, you know, communities are, people, drivers know that where those potholes are on that road that they avoid every day, or in their neighborhood or in their town, because we have not been able to put forward the resources to our local units of government to help in the transportation.
You mentioned the Badger Care expansion before, and the possibility of that even making it to the floor. You know, in this past election, referendum showed that overwhelmingly, when this did show up on the ballot, voters in Wisconsin supported the federal expansion of Medicaid funds. We heard last week that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and JFC co-chair, John Nygren, said that there is no way they were taking this up. Do you have any sense as to how you could work with Republicans to even just get the conversation going?
They don't seem really interested in continuing that conversation, that they have been very direct. As over a year, we have talked about this, probably longer, about accepting those federal dollars, that they feel that what has they have put in place is something that is meeting the needs of Wisconsinites, low-income Wisconsinites, for access to health care. I think that is not correct. I think there are many people that still fall through the cracks in access to health care, and really the freedom to have the opportunity to have health care that is needed is not something that should be taken lightly. And I think people in the state, we need to make sure that we are looking at those folks who have been removed from the rolls. Their health issues are not going away. Their ailments are not going away. They are being seen in free clinics. They are being seen in emergency rooms, and we still need to pay for that. So I know that they have been very firm on their position on Badger Care and accepting it, but I think they are a bit tone deaf to the wishes of the voters in the state.
Another referendum was raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. Is there any sense that that could be taken up and discussed among lawmakers?
That one, I would think maybe, I don't know if there's any wiggle room on that one, that I have tried to listen to some of the co-chair, John Nygren, when he has been talking about the budget and on issues that have been asked to him. And I am interested to see if there is somewhere that they think we could maybe move on that, and if there is something that is acceptable to them. But certainly 10-10, I think, is something that is reasonable. If we lift more people out of poverty, if we have more money that they are earning, it lessens their dependence on many of the programs here at the state that they might be qualified and eligible for. So I hope we can have that discussion. I have a little bit of a glimmer of hope on that one versus the Badger Care Medicaid, just because I have known that their conversation has been pretty short-lived on the health care aspect.
What are some other goals that you have or some of your fellow Democrats have and that you think could actually, you know, come to fruition and find compromise with Republicans?
Well, the next several weeks, I do look forward to sitting down and talking with my colleagues to talk about what are the priorities that they have in the districts that they represent. Education will continue to be one of our strong issues that we care about, and especially rural schools that I represent a rural district as well.
We heard a lot about the funding formula during the campaign season.
Yes, and I know that there was a task force that would put forward, that listened, traveled around the state. So I hope that there are some areas there in the rural schools initiative that we can help with funding and declining enrollment and the transportation costs there, but also broadband expansion and making sure appropriate bandwidth in our communities, that infrastructure for economic development. So, I will meet with my colleagues. I will meet with the majority and see as we go into the next session and go into the next budget. We recognize that it's not going to be easy and we won't always agree on things, but I really do want to have a civil dialogue and improve the tone with some of the strained relationships that are in that building.
State Senator Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse was elected last week by Democrats in the Wisconsin State Senate to serve the next 2 years as the minority leader. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows and photos, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.